Death, even for a moment, changes everything. In Life After Breath, Jacob Cooper's near-death experience as a child ripped an opening between him and the spirit world. He lived, but was forever changed. In a moment, Jacob Cooper and his story on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Jacob Cooper with us, clinical social worker, hypnotherapist who specializes now in past life regression therapy, works privately with clients through online services. Inspired by his own near-death experience and transformative encounters, he facilitates spiritual awareness and empowerment through life-changing seminars. His book is called Life After Breath, How a Brush with Fatality Gave Me a Glimpse of Immortality. Jacob, welcome to the program. Looking forward to this with you tonight.
A true honor and pleasure to be with you here tonight, George. Thank you. Good morning, actually.
How old were you when you had your near-death experience?
Yeah, in linear age, I was 3 years old. It happened in September of 1993.
Oh, my gosh. What happened?
I had something known as pertussis, otherwise known as whooping cough, which led to my own suffocation. I experienced this in a playground, and from losing my own breath and suffocating, I gained a whole new breath of eternal awareness that never left me. And so this was a very profound near-death experience with a lot of allegorical and symbolical references from being in a playground and having this on a slide. And, you know, it had a lot of the classical, lineups of a near-death experience. By the way, my good friend, Dr. Raymond Moody, says hello. I just spoke with him yesterday.
Oh, he's a great guy. We think the world of him.
Oh, yeah. Nice. I was running a past life regression workshop in Connecticut, and right before I was about to talk, Raymond called me. And it was just very synchronistic, you know, that he called right before the workshop. And, on the phone with him, while I was on the phone on the way back, we were able to see, I saw a rainbow, and that was, to me, just a glimpse of eternity from talking, you know, to the afterlife guy, right?
Exactly. And he's got a little snippet on the cover of your book, too. He's one of a kind. So at 3 years old, you had this near-death experience, but you remember the things that happened?
Absolutely. And, you know, certainly as a, you know, clinical therapist, I think a lot of that had to do with trauma. I can't think of too many more things that are more traumatic, you know, than suffocation. And for myself, at that young age, you know, suffocating, at least unless you're on a ventilator, you know, the breath, you know, really keeps us going. And, you know, to lose that, I was in this place of, you know, not in my body, not there. It was a very traumatic state. Combine that with, I was very much connected to higher consciousness. You call it the super consciousness. Basically, consciousness beyond the brain. You know, I do think that that's how I was able to remember it. As I'm not able to remember too many events other than really profound transformative experiences from my, you know, early childhood.
Does a three-year-old Jacob go through the death experience differently than an adult, or is it all the same?
It's an interesting question. I think they process, you know, in terms of the near-death experience, if you ask near-death experiencers, I mean, one of them is PMH Atwater. I think children and infants, you know, take around 20 to 30 years to integrate it. And I could attest to that, you know, because for me, even to this day, I'm still finding meaning and making sense of it. So it's very much still open-ended. You know, while the linear events don't change, you know, finding ways to extract meaning and understanding within, you know, this life is something that I feel will last me a lifetime. But I think kids in general are a lot closer and more aware to the other side, being less conditioned or programmed from this life. So it could very well be, but I think that the linear body and the ego is much different than the eternal soul. I think we're eternal souls in this finite body. And having my near-death experience, I was not that three-year-old, you know, ego or personality as Jake as the kid, but I was rather connected to a consciousness beyond my body and beyond my age.
Over the years, and you're 31 now, how did this affect you over the past 28 years?
Well, in many ways, I would say the life that I live is very much about giving back life that I was given in moments of lifelessness. And, you know, I do everything that I can from the ground up, whether that is a psychotherapist, an author, running workshops, to do all I can to plant the seed of hope and inspiration within people. And that same inspiration and hope that I was provided in moments of deprivation of oxygen and deprivation of life force and apathy. And so that really has informed me, but it also has allowed me to understand that, you know, this life is very much a brightly guided life. It's not random. You know, there's a higher intelligence that really governs our life. And so it allowed me to understand that, you know, spirituality is not in the monopolization of a select few, but it is who we truly are. And we have to re-remember who we truly are and what we're connected to. So at least for myself, it's allowed me a lot more empowerment, but certainly a lot of difficulty, you know, because I really, you know, from a young age had this experience that I wasn't able to fully articulate until later in life. And so the suffocation had continuity until maybe I was in my later teens and early 20s when I was able to really have the lexicon to it, you know, which is very common, you know, for childhood, infant, near-death experiencers. I mean, at least for me, it was something so sacred that I didn't feel that the word was even, you know, significant, you know, to match the profound experience that I had.
How old were you, Jacob, when you realized what really happened to you when you were three?
Let's say it was around, you know, a decade ago. I fully knew, you know, in a sense, but I wasn't able to have a lexicon of vocabulary for my experience.
Right.
I do obviously credit Raymond, who coined the term near-death experience, just spoke to a couple hours ago. But it wasn't until I got a book by an author by the name of Betty Ady, until I heard the term near-death experience. For me, this was something that I felt that I was the only one that had. I didn't know that other people had it. So it gave me a lot of universality behind it, but also a terminology. And certainly as a psychotherapist, you know, I see a lot of profound healing when people are able to have, you know, a label behind what they're going through. I mean, obviously labels could be quite, you know, limiting, but I think if you could name it, you could tame it, so to speak. And so for myself, this grand experience was able to put, you know, in a diagnostic name, which actually, if you talk to Raymond, you know, the term near-death experience has nothing to do with the experience, because death is the furthest thing from what near-death experiencers, you know, have. You could have death of the body, but it's an awakening to the eternity of the soul that sometimes we forget.
Could you explain to us what happened to you when you were three in terms of what you were able to recall and see, you know, years later?
Absolutely. And, you know, the experience happened. I was, you know, at a park. It was, you know, right before the Jewish high holiday of Yom Kippur, which is, you know, the Day of Atonement. And we're, you know, meeting, preparing ourselves to meet the Creator for a day, for a year of abundance and manifestation for that upcoming year, and trying to, you know, rid ourselves and our sins and all that. So, but little did I know I was about to meet the Creator outside of the Jewish faith in a very much a direct basis. I went to the park and climbed up, you know, the, you know, ladders on going up into a slide, and the last rung of the ladder, you know, my breathing became a lot more belabored and resuscitated, and I just began suffocating, which was, to this day, was the most, you know, death does not scare me. I think, you know, the shutting down the body and dying, you know, to me was incredibly traumatic.
Oh, that's horrible. Absolutely.
And so, you know, to just not have a breath, which, you know, really keeps us going, you know, and that had that taken from me was very odd. And so after suffocating, my body just, I saw, wasn't functioning. It's as if I went to a power breaker in the home and I shut off every outlet. And one by one, my body just wasn't functioning due to the deprivation of oxygen. And so as if you're in a car and your car engine's not working, it wouldn't make sense to sit in the driver's seat. You're going to look at the engine and look at the car and see what's happening. And so I was able to go in the disembodied state because my, you know, physical meat suit or body was not functioning. And I was able to have an awareness of a lot of different components of my body, and was able to look at it with profound awareness that I don't think I would have had going to medical school, never mind, you know, a three-year-old. But, in, you know, after that moment, I was able to feel and see my brain, you know, being deprived of oxygen due to suffocation. Then slowly but surely, my brain literally felt a snap in it, like a large crack, as if you take a plug in a wall and just plug it out. And after that, my brain literally felt like a crack didn't happen. That's when, so to speak, spirit and God came in. And had a lot of the classical examples of near-death experiences, the tunnel sensation, you know, entering the light, you know, having awareness of what I could best describe as the all that ever is and ever was, and to me, the apex, the endless apex and endless euphoria and center point of reality. And the best way I could describe that in the vernacular would be God. And then, you know, awareness of a Christ consciousness, awareness of my own, spiritual primary guides, that guided me, down the ladder. I was able to be aware of the people that I went to into the park, and I was able to know their hearts, and I was able to know a lot more about them, that I didn't know. And this was on a very much an intuitive basis, but I was able to see, the electromagnetic fields and some of the angelic teams around them. And, moments later, I was greeted by an endless sea of angels that was just literally floating right in front of my eyes. And my body was irresponsive to what people were trying to, they're trying to call me, and I wasn't responding. And it was very frustrating. I could see how spirits feel when they cross over and we're looking at their body and they're trying to grab us, tell us that they're okay. So I was able to see them, but they couldn't see me. And, I think that lasted for a long time, where they were looking at me later in life as synonymous for the body of a young child. But I knew that there was an eternal being inside of that soul, inside of that body. I was able to be greeted by just a thin veil of differentiation between this realm and that realm, and these angels were just floating very peacefully. And I was able to have distinct awareness of spirit guides and angels. Spirit guides had a lot more earthbound and human and micro tendencies, were a lot more focused on myself, where the angels that I saw were very uniform. It was almost kind of like God's minions, and they were just there sending beautiful energy, and light to the whole situation. And I just almost had to pinch myself because, yes, it was familiar. Yes, I've seen it before, but at the same time, it was an adjustment from, even 3 years old, having my blinders on and not being aware of these other, realms all around us and the love inside of us and all around us from the other side. And moments later, I was greeted by my soul family, and then with, my own spirit guides, my soul family, I was given a profound choice of what I would do. And I guess I got my business hat on and I said, well, if I do stay, what would this life, become of it? And then moments later, I had just a lot of just flashing imagery of different incarnations, in which I chronicle, in Life After Breath, and the most relevant, incarnation, which has been evidentially provided to me by intuitives throughout the years. This was long before I got public, of a lifetime in which I committed suicide, and I saw a lot of the parallels of that lifetime and the near-death experience, and so to speak, from completion I began. But I saw that not only that I committed suicide, but I remembered the different students that I had in that lifetime, as well as a feeling as if I was trapped and my back was against the wall. And, it was very clear to me that the near-death experience was an experience for my own dharma, to entrust that the eternal force, the eternal energy inside of me and all around me was infinitely greater than any challenge or any experience that I encountered. And this was a profound message. And slowly but surely, I was able to see myself speaking in front of people and having this message. And as beautiful as the light realm on the other side was, the opportunity to bring in the hereafter into the here now in this lifetime, to be a harbinger of good news and to allow just a gentle reminder of who truly people are and what we're infinitely connected to was something that I couldn't pass by. And with that moment of choice, everything passed by. And, I had a lot of doubts as to what the heck I was doing, why sure. did I, choose that, to turn down heaven. And then moments later, my guides came to me and they said, there is a path, entrusted, and, your thoughts could really allow you to be in flow with that or to sway you away from that and to really have your thoughts in alignment, with your path and with the higher realm, and to have a knowing and a trust in that. And from that, I woke up on a hospital bed to my mother, who was very distressed, and I was, quite in a state of influx of emotions, and, that went on to rage, which I think a lot of it had to do with trauma, but also the inability to express what happened, and to not have the words to it, and to, just be incredibly frustrated and suppressed in my language. So,
well, Jacob, let me ask you, did you have, even though you were three in the afterlife, did you have the mind of a three-year-old, or it sounds like you were much more advanced?
No, I don't think any one of us is our chronological age. I think, this is what we're experiencing, expressing with the personality. But beyond the body, beyond the personality, beyond the ego, beyond the linear age is an eternal soul. So for myself, I had connection at least to the lifetime as three-year-old Jake, in a sense that I was thinking about, okay, what would my parents think, and what would I look like when I got older? I mean, all those thoughts came into me. So I had thought energy. But I recognize that none of us are really chronological age. We're eternal spiritual beings in this finite body. And so there's an outer representation of who we are, but there's much more to that. There's also an inner representation. There's also an inner awareness, you know, an inner consciousness, you know, that isn't created by age. It's just filtered through the body and through chronological age. So this was very much an experience of the soul, not necessarily my personality or my limited chronological age of three. Temporary, you know, age of three at the time.
What revived you or got you back?
Well, that's a good question. I would say, you know, I would say spirit. I would say the other side. I would say the moment that I suffocated, I was able to breathe this, you know, light of eternity. And I think in Judaism, the faith that I come from, spirit is known as ruach, or the wind of God. And for me, I would say the wind of God was something that I knew could never take from me. But I would say the moment of choice, the moment that I said that I will continue, revived me. And I think a lot of near-death experiencers experience this with everything, you know, that goes against them. If they choose to come back, you know, it defies, you know, logic. But at the time, you know, if you ask me how long was I out, or if you ask my parents, it's such a traumatic experience that, you know, no one's really looking at their, you know, wristwatches at the time. You know, they got the ambulance, they rushed me to the hospital, you know, but I was, you know, irresponsive and suffocated, you know, due to whooping cough. And so it was really a profound, you know, miracle. But I do credit spirit, you know, for all of this. And I dedicate my life to giving that breath of life to people who feel lifeless and breathless. Sure. And certainly on an allegorical, a literal basis, that's happening in today's times, as there's a lot of parallels with, obviously, you know, today's times, and the highly, you know, in the macro level, you know, and what, you know, I experienced in my near-death experience through whooping cough.
Do you recall having dreams or nightmares of the experience?
You know, I remember very little about my childhood other than surrounding transformative experiences beyond this reality. And so after having this, I was back in preschool, and there was this light that was able to go inside of my brain, and I just knew the brain was just merely a filter between the two worlds, you know, this world and the hereafter. And so I was very able to cross over and to go to the other side on almost a regular basis. The most, suffocating experience is when I was having interdimensional communication, and I turned to a classmate at the time, and I asked if he saw what I saw, and he just looked at me with quite a perplexed look. And so, you know, it was just a feeling of incredible isolation that I was able to have this awareness and this experience. And so I kept it very much close to me. But, you know, the experience really changed my brain, you know, because my brain was quite deprived of oxygen. And so as a young kid, I was very much connected to a deeper wisdom and just the flow from a very young age. And you know, that stays with me to this day, not so much on a micro basis, but within my work and everything that I do. It's, you know, life and higher consciousness doesn't come from me, it comes through me. And you know, from a young age, I was very much connected to a higher awareness and a higher flow of energy coming through me.
Jacob, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk more about life after breath. I want to get into your role as a hypnotherapist and some of the things you're experiencing with your clients and your patients. What are they going through as well? Jacob's websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. He's also on Instagram and Facebook. And the name of his book is called Life After Breath, How a Brush with Fatality Gave Me a Glimpse of Immortality. So we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie back with you, Jacob Cooper with us with his truly remarkable book called Life After Breath. Was your near-death experience, Jacob, the reasoning that got you into being a hypnotherapist and a special therapist?
It was a part of it. Like, you know, like I said before, you know, a part of my near-death experience occurred previous lifetimes, mm-hmm. You know, that I was able to remember. And so as a kid, you know, just out of the blue, I would have this, you know, recurring lifetime in which I took my own life. And it was quite scary, you know, but when I was able to have evidential intuitives, you know, provide me within, you know, that lifetime that I saw, I knew that there was something to this. And so, you know, I think later in my teens, I was on a quest for this, but essentially I really wanted to give back what I was given. And so for people to allow themselves to understand that, you know, they can never die. And my near-death experience wasn't something that I just held on to, but I looked at, you know, past life regression as another tool, another avenue to understand the continuity of life.
People can get your book, Life After Breath, Amazon, of course. How about bookstores? Are they out there yet?
Not, I think with Barnes & Noble online and Target, you know, when Walmart online, not within, you know, all the bookstores, but definitely Amazon is a big, source.
As you look back now, all these years, are you glad this thing happened to you, this experience?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. I look at it as a double-edged sword in a sense that, yeah. You know, it was very hard for me to be a leaf in water, and to, you know, it always felt very different, you know, in having this. And it was very hard at times to put that together, you know, as to why. But I would have it no other way. You know, I think in a way, it's just so much better to create your own current, you know, than to be a leaf in water. And so this allowed me that, but it also led to a very much a tumultuous childhood that I experienced, which, you know, at times is different. You look at some near-death experiencers, they're profoundly changed and they're very peaceful and, you know, stuff like that. But this is diametrically different than, I guess, a conventional near-death experiencer who might have it, you know, middle of life and stuff like that, as you see within the media and, you know, different other people. But I would say I was very much resistant against, you know, the mechanism of society and the conveyor belt and, you know, a lot of things that people just bought into. I would, you know, be very much opposition and question. And it made life very hard for me to just almost be parented, because it's almost like the world that everyone was looking at, I was able to look at differently. It's kind of like the allegory of the cave with Plato, where you have the perception of reality by, let's say, the powers that be, and people are looking at that, you know, and then all of a sudden you're able to get yourself out of those shackles and break yourself out of that and, you know, and get out of that. And I think the near-death experience is an allegory, the allegory of the cave in many ways. You know, so it was very hard for me to just look at this concept of reality that so many people bought into.
What caused you to step up and go public with this, finally?
Now, I first started publicly speaking about this when I was around 25 years old. I think in a way, you know, Betty was a very much influential within my career, and certainly wasn't for money, wasn't for, you know, anything easy. In many ways, it made life a lot more difficult because I'm a very shy person, so for me to be in front of a crowd was difficult. But,
yeah,
you know, I was once in a yoga class, and I was at a very low point in my life, much like a lot of, you know, if you look at Eckhart Tolle and Neil Donald Walsh, or a lot of people, when they have these awakenings or profound experiences, it often is from losing a part of yourself and having this abyss, and then all of a sudden the profound awakening, so finding yourself, losing yourself. But this woman in the yoga seminar came up to me and she said, you know, I see you speaking in front of a lot of people. And I didn't say a word to her. I don't know who this person was. And she goes, you're going to be a healer one day. You're going to have a profound impact on a lot of people. And that just allowed me validation with what I saw in my near-death experience. And I just really understood that this was something that I was meant to do. This was my dharma, and it felt right. It felt that this was what I was supposed to be doing. But I think within the field of mental health, I think a lot of clients that I was, you know, starting in my, you know, internships and, you know, dealing with grief, I understood belief in the afterlife as a tool for grief, and deeper to that is a knowing as a tool for grief. And I think Dr. Kubler-Ross, who studied near-death experiences, speaks about the five stages, but I think the sixth and seventh stage, but to have meaning in the last stage, to have a clear knowing, you know, beyond a loss of a loved one. And so I think the near-death experience in general is just another pathway up to the mountain of transformation and a clear understanding, you know, of eternity. And I think that's a great tool for a lot of people who need invigorated, you know, faith and hope and inspiration within their moments of, you know, dark periods.
Do you use your hypnotherapy a lot to get near-death experience stories from people or reincarnation? How do you use it with the client?
Well, you do a lot of past life regression, which, you know, those who are, you know, listeners who are unfamiliar, we use the term past life, but really, you know, that speaks to linear mind and linear language. Beyond that, there's really no past, present, future, and that I experienced that in my near-death experience, where there's just all just one moment. But, you know, within our bodies, within the linear mind, we see life as linear. But, you know, past life regression really is going back to, for a way that's easier to understand, into different lifetimes. And it's a great way to understand as well as to move the needle on issues that are stopping you or issues that you're holding on to, whether that be traumatic experiences, health-related issues, but a lot of unexplained tendencies that aren't within this lifetime could be found, you know, through that. So I think it really allows a lot of breakthroughs. I mean, I've seen it within my own practice where people are getting stuck within their own family situations or their life's purpose or, you know, even areas of health where they're having issues and they're not sure of. And so the soul is in the body, and the soul, you know, works with the body in a cellular memory basis. And at times when it's on the cog of the wheel of another lifetime, it's continually regurgitating that in the body in a subconscious basis, is repeating that. So information is power, knowledge is power. And so people to understand that that was then, you know, conventional ways, this is now, they'll be able to be a lot more mindful, a lot more present to really step into their own power, their own lives a lot easier, and not just regurgitate, you know, other, you know, tendencies that they've carried over.
Jacob, obviously without names, give us a story or two of a past life regression and what you were able to encounter with the hypnotherapy.
So I think within groups, like something like, you know, today I was doing a group and, you know, two people had parallel experiences where they just almost looked at each other and they remembered each other. And that's common with some of the groups that I have where within the group that I have, they'll just spontaneously look at each other and just point to each other like they remembered their own lifetimes. And so I think that's profound. You know, and I guess others where, you know, I think generally they're able to have a higher vantage point of challenging personalities, and they're able to understand some of their different rules, and they're able to allow themselves to see past the surface, understand some of the difficult personalities and some of the difficult roles as a part, you know, of the theater, you know, of life, so to speak. And this is all just different acts and different plays that people have. And so I've seen that, but I think what's most impressive is, you know, some people are very much stuck on, you know, issues of the throat that I've had, and they recognize that they were hung within another lifetime, and they've been able to improve and progress from that. You know, so I've seen, you know, people progress from areas of health to life's purpose to understanding of social family dynamics, you know, as well as unexplained tendencies, you know, that they're able to progress from and move forward from. And certainly I've been able to have that from my own, you know, life, you know, in my own near-death experience, in my own past lives, and you know, I was able to understand, you know, different moments in which, for some unknown reason, I would go back to this past life and I would have it again, and I was able to distinguish that from then. But, you know, it was very scary to not have a label behind this and have this experience as a child and all these traumatic experiences in the life that I took my own life. But, you know, on the flip side of that, I understood that that life, I was, you know, from completion we begin, and, you know, this life that I have is very much speaking, you know, to people who are just feeling lost or hit the wall, to understand that what's inside of them is infinitely greater than any challenge in front of them, as I said before.
Absolutely. And, Jacob, since you've been doing this now for some years, where does it take you next? What do you think is on the horizon for you personally?
Yeah, you know, I think the difference between living from the ego and living from the spirit is, the ego to me is very closed-ended. It just has like a closed-ended concept of who you are, what you're about, and it holds on to that. And, you know, spirit is very much about being open-ended. It's about letting go and allowing yourself to flow and entrust. And, you know, Albert Einstein said the most important, you know, question that people have to answer is, the universe a place that works with us and against us? And so I think the closest way for us to trust in spirit is to entrust that it's an infinitely abundant place, and from the most place of abundance, when we're connected to that, our life is reflected within abundance. And so I trust, you know, exactly, you know, where I am at each moment is where I need to be, and I flow into it. But from a practical standpoint, I'm working on my next book, which is titled The Wisdom of Jacob's Ladder, where Life After Breath is a bit more personal, memoir-based, as, you know, people don't know me through a hole in the wall. And I found that, you know, having someone's experience is good, but at the times they could be at an ivory tower, and it's not very much relatable. And so I tried to make this book as relatable as possible to empower others to take ownership of the hereafter. I feel if I'm known as the afterlife guy, the near-death experience guy, I haven't done my job. My job is for people to remember that in themselves. And I think all spiritual masters would say that whatever you see in me is inside of you. And I think my job is just to reflect this light and to allow people to remember it. But I am working on my second book, and just continuing to find different ways to reach people. And that gets me excited every day. I come from a quite privileged place where there's been so many, you know, masters in front of me and teachers and guides. And, you know, I'm late to the ballgame right now. And it's great because there's this whole wave and opening that's just very seamless and easy for me to follow from some of the greats who broken ground in times where there's a lot more pushback in their work.
Had you not had the near-death experience, would you have gone into the field?
I would say so, but I would say I would be a lot more grounded, you know, in the field, so to speak. Huh. I come from a lineage of three different social workers. My grandmother was one, and my father's a clinical social worker.
Ah, okay. All right.
You know, and you know,
it was your destiny, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. But, you know, as a child, instead of, like, you know, just mooching on Sunday morning football and watching that for hours on end, I was volunteering with developmental disabilities, you know, kids, and my father would run all these programs. And so I come from a very much of a family that in order to find yourself, you have to be willing to find yourself within service. And I think that's a principle within Alcoholics Anonymous, the value of finding yourself within the service of others. And so I think I would have still been doing that, but I think this allowed it to be a lot more tuned up, so to speak, and a higher vantage point. And I think you're able to reach people in a very much unlimited way, where you're not as much hand-tied within different, you know, modalities and different practices. You're able to work with so many different layers in a multidimensional aspect to reach multidimensional people that we work with, as we are truly multidimensional. We're not unidimensional, as I experienced in my near-death experience.
We're going to take calls next hour with Jacob Cooper as we talk about his near-death experience and his book, Life After Breath. Tell us about how you would recommend people handle grief and depression, which is a big problem nowadays.
It sure is. And I think right now, on a macro basis, we're all grieving, you know, in our own way. We're grieving the world that we once had to the world that is. And you know, I would say, you know, there's a lot of bypassing within the New Age field and within a lot of my colleagues with respect, and, you know, that's their vantage point. But I think in order to build a house, you have to have a solid foundation. And I think we're rooted in multi-layers. But I think there's a human part of us that, you know, still is attached to emotion, it's attached to feeling and sadness and pain. And so I think that's a very important part to honor and to go through our own stages. But on the other side of that, you know, is transformation. It's very hard to find someone who's in the field who didn't have some degree of adversity. And I look at all these experiences, they have different labels, but at the end of the day, it's the same result, where he had some degree of shakeup, whether that was self-induced or just a natural occurrence that happened to you. And at the end of that was a pillar and a bedrock of resilience, strength, you know, invigorated wisdom from that dark night of the soul. And so I think really step backs are really step forward, and it's hard to have a linear trajectory in life. I think really sometimes we have to descend, so to speak. But I think it's really allowing ourselves to be mindful, to be present within what we're feeling, and obviously being able to process it and to have a vernacular and a lexicon behind your experience, and to be careful where you place your grief, because there are a lot of people who do take advantage, you know, including a lot of intuitives and psychics who will take advantage of your own grief. So I think it's being careful where you place and who you place your vulnerabilities with, and obviously having a trusted, licensed professional to work out, you know, some of your grief-related issues is important, but also, you know, to be able to understand and normalize that feeling as something that's happening to, you know, the world at large. And I think in a way we're able to unite in that regard. We're able to become one in that regard, to understand that in each way it's a similar storm. Everyone's in a unique boat, but it's a similar storm of grief that people are experiencing.
Jacob, are near-death experiences set up to really teach us about the other side, or is there a purpose for it?
I think so. I know so. There's a purpose behind everything, I believe. And the near-death experience told me, you know, really there's just a divine order. And sometimes at the face value, it doesn't, you know, no sense makes sense, so to speak, in this world. That is true. But it's kind of like looking at a pixel of a picture and just focusing on that instead of taking a step back and look at the divine tapestry and infinite intelligence behind what we're going through. And so I think the ego says that I'm right and God and spirit, you're wrong. And I think when having this near-death experience, it allowed me a lot more trust in the infinite light, despite what meets the eye, despite what we're temporarily going through, to have an trust that this too shall pass, and no matter what happens, it's a part of us that's indestructible. But I do think near-death experiences are charted. I think that's a very pivotal moment within lifetimes, and I do believe certainly mine was, because of the symbology and allegory of the light at the end of the tunnel and experiencing total deprivation of life force, which what I experienced within my last incarnation and suicide, and just feeling like there was no hope, there was no change. I was just stuck in this infinite place of suffering. And once you're able to go through near-death experience or get on the other side of suffering, you understand that love and light is all that there is at the end of the day, and everything else, just comes to the nothingness of which it came for, just merely, turbulence. And I think sometimes to see the stars, you have to have a dark night, to remind yourself of the eternal light, that we're forever connected to.
All right, Jacob, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and take phone calls with you next.